Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. This is the Best Ever You Show, and I'm your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino, and I'm feeling a little starstruck today, Josh. I don't know. I can't believe you're on. No, just kidding. We've got
That's
Josh
funny.
Johnson. Yeah, we've got Josh Johnson with us, who is the U.S. director for the UK-based Scarlett Entertainment. How cool is that? We've got you for a full hour to pick your brain about the entertainment industry and, you know, all the ins and outs and all the secrets that you know. And for those following along, you can go to the website scarlettentertainment.com, which I know a lot of you follow along on your computer. So, hi, Josh. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. Yeah, it's a little you're calling me from Houston, which is the base for the U.S. offices of Scarlett Entertainment. Is that correct?
Yeah, correct. We we opened up in Houston to service some of the local entertainment clients and to make it our short-term hub. There's so much travel involved in initially what we're doing to open up the brand in the U.S. that, you know, for instance, I was just in Beverly Hills on Tuesday. So it's helped to be in Houston because we're kind of in the middle of the country and can work mm-hmm. both sides of the fence, if you will. We're due to open up a New York office, hopefully in the summer of 2012, and that will service our partnerships and clients that we have in New York City in particular. We also have an office in L.A. that will be opening up shortly thereafter. And then, of course, we just opened our UAE office, and all of this comes straight from our U.K. office to where that's where the company started.
Yeah. And how did you join? How did you join this and have this become your job? What a neat job you have.
It's kind of interesting. If you're asking how I got into the industry, that's a whole different story. But in terms of coming to Scarlett, I was part of opening Trector Entertainment, which is the brainchild of the Fame record producer John Luongo. And what we did is we became the industry's largest brokerage agency and brokered deals with everyone from Dunkin' Donuts to Build-A-Bear, NASCAR, and all points in between, MTV, Fuse Network. And that kind of spurred me into being on the management side. We also managed a couple major entities, a celebrity chef and some international designers. And it just... You know, in this industry, you have to have many hats, and in that role in particular, we were working with all different types of properties and entities and working with, like, the Felix the Cat label with their work all throughout the world. And it just it evolved, and there was a point to where Scarlett came to me and said, you know, we've heard about you. You're doing amazing work, and we would love for you to do that for us. We have our great brand in the UK and the EU, and we need someone like yourself to open us up to the US market because of your high-profile clients and contacts. And, you know, that's just how business goes. And John and I sat down, and I said, this is where I want to go. And he said, go and have a great time. And the biggest thing in this industry is you can't burn bridges. So, you know, yeah. John is still in contact when we need it, and in fact working on a project that his name is attached to possibly for the fall. And, you know, that's just where it goes. If you were to ask anyone on this side of the entertainment industry, I guarantee you 9 times out of 10, when you ask them how they got into it, they're going to say, oh, I kind of fell into it. That's what happens.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
exactly how it goes.
Well, I think what I love about you, I really and truly my favorite thing about you is that no matter who you are, for example, I'm just me, but you treat me like I'm a movie star. It's hysterical. Do you know what I mean? You don't treat me like I'm some, you know, nobody or anything like that. You know, is that part of your makeup to treat everybody just brilliantly nice?
Well, I appreciate you saying that, and that's, in all honesty, that's a sincere goal of mine in the way that I try and work both professionally and personally. A lot of it comes from how I was raised. You know, I was raised in middle America in Connecticut by parents who taught me to value everyone that you come in contact with, and at times it can be a detriment. You know, this industry is very much cutthroat, so it's not always – when you're lower in the ranks, it's not always going to be to your benefit. But when you get to my level and above, that's truly where the success comes in. So, you know, you're a star to me. And whether you believe in yourself or not, I know I'm in a position to where if I can treat you that way and I can show you what it's like to feel that way, it's going to help your career. And it's going to help you define who you want to be in this industry. And there's so many people that come in and say, I have this talent and I need for you to position it for me or get me a deal. And my first question always back to them is, why are you doing it? Are you doing it because you want to be a star? Or are you doing it because you feel you have a gift that you want to share with someone? And for your case in particular, that's the gift. And I love being a part of showcasing people's gifts.
Yeah. Yeah, I can tell. It's within you. It's like you have one of those jobs. You know, we always on Best Ever You, we always talk about jobs that feel like you're not really working. And it feels
exactly.
to me like that's the type of gig you have where you just love it so much you'd even do it if you didn't get paid.
That's funny
you
say that.
About.
Yeah, that's exactly what it's like. And I've coming up through the ranks, you know, I started off working on the talent side in radio in North Carolina, and that really is, I mean, you're barely making anything. And the love of that is to, A, hear yourself on the radio, and B, who you get to come in contact with. And, you know, that's how I've been able, I keep that mentality no matter how high up in the ranks I'll go. You have to love what you do. And at the end of the day, if you love what you do, then you don't mind having the 18-hour days because you're loving what you do. I just spent 18 hours between travel and actual working in L.A., and it was tiring, but it was exciting, and it was fun. And I couldn't do that if I didn't love what I did.
Yeah. Now, how did you – let's go back all the way back to when you very first started, just for those listening – so that they really understand how you actually really, you know, started. And I know with just about everybody, everything is connected to everything else we do. It's kind of like a stepping stone in a way. But can you tell us a little bit about some of the writing that you've done and some of just go back a little bit?
Sure. I started out at a radio station in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I had multiple hats. I wrote commercials. I did voice work, did radio work. You know, I was a jock, and it just kind of emerged from there. It was said a long time ago that I have a unique gift that in the same writing I can make someone laugh and make them cry. And it's all about evoking emotion when you write. So I've always thought of the big picture, and I've always known that I wanted to get to a certain spot. Back then I didn't know it was where I am now, but I knew I wanted to get to a certain spot. So I took every opportunity that I can. If I got a call at 5 in the afternoon that they wanted me to come do an overnight, then I left my pregnant wife and went and did the overnight shift. You know, I was always able to do something, and that's really important. You just have to put yourself out there and have faith in the greater plan and just kind of follow it. So after spending time in the radio and being told, wow, you have a young family and you're being offered a job in, it was either San Antonio or Southern California, both of which paid barely nothing. And they said, you know, radio is great, but you're not going to make anything. And you may have a job on Monday and by Friday, you may not. That's just how it works. So I got into the writing side, wrote for some papers in North Carolina, did a lot of stringer writing to where, you know, I'd get inquiries from all around the country and I'd write just stringer pieces for them. And doing that long enough got me to a point to where I was able to be a columnist for Gannett Publishing. And along with writing some travel pieces and just some product pieces, I started a column that became syndicated that was called Daddy Diaries. And it was me writing about my life as a dad and as a husband and the funny way I look at things. And that's really where my career kind of catapulted. I went from having a relatively small circulation just in the Gulf Coast area to where the column, you were seeing it on the West Coast, you were seeing it in the Northeast. When back then, there was the Virginia Tech shooting, and I got a really nice letter from one of the parents that I had written a piece about right after the Virginia Tech shooting, and they actually put it up on that memorial wall that they had constructed on campus. And that's where I started to realize that I was having an effect on people. You know, and I started getting inquiries from people in Hollywood and from New York City and saying, you need to come out here and write treatments and shows. And at the same time, Gannett came to me and said, we need someone like you. There's this new phenomenon in entertainment to where shows are being streamed online, and we'd like to do an online show for you. And it's going to be you traveling around the Gulf Coast and getting yourself into trouble. Taking me and having me try and capture an alligator. Or another one was taking me to a ranch and participating in castrating a bull. And my goal was, A, you know, I'm not going to pass that up, and B, I had to make people laugh and keep writing about it. And the writing has been the catalyst for my career. It kind of blossomed from my ability to make people laugh and make people think. At the end of the day, we're all given gifts, and I think my gift is to be able to make people laugh, give them some emotion, and let them know it's okay that your kid just ran in the room and scared you so bad that you fell off the coffee table. I mean, it sounds stupid, but that at the end of the day, you have to laugh at yourself.
Yeah, that's a big thing with me, too. I'm on humor patrol 99% of the time. I find humor in everything. I mean, everything.
And it unlocks a lot of doors. I mean, that's yeah. part of my tool when I'm with people is, it catches them off guard, and they don't necessarily mm-hmm. expect someone in my position to make a joke, but then it lets everyone kind of take a sigh of relief and sit back, and then you can really get to the heart of the conversation.
Yeah. I got to go back with you even more, though. I want to know what you were like as a kid. Were you always a little writer, or were you a singer or an actor? Or what was Josh, the five-year-old?
Well, you know, if you were to ask my parents, they might have a different answer for you, but I come from a long line of entertainers of sorts. My grandfather had his own band in upstate New York. My mom was an accomplished singer. She sang at Carnegie Hall. She toured Europe. So I grew up with music being at the core of everything that I did. There wasn't a time that music wasn't in my life. So I'd like to say that I was a great artist in myself, but that wouldn't be the truth. The truth is I kind of was a little all over the place. I went from wanting to be a comedian myself to saying I was going to be a pro baseball player. To just getting into trouble in high school. I was in high school in the early 90s, and that's when no one knew about ADD. And I have ADD. And so people thought that I was just the kid who cracked jokes and cemented the door shut to their high school and got in trouble a lot. And, it didn't come out till as ADD became more mainstream that it's the creative genius in you. So if you were to ask how I was as a kid, as a five-year-old, precocious, love people, at times maybe a little shy. By the time I got to high school, I was the quintessential athlete who didn't pay a whole lot of attention to school. I loved to draw. I actually was nominated for the Presidential Art Scholarship when I was in high school and just didn't follow through on it because I was having too much fun getting in trouble. It's one of those things to where when you're trying to find your own personality, your own identity, you try out a lot of different hats. And I think in my childhood, I tried every hat possible.
Well, I think that comes with being really smart, too. I mean, you can just listen to your voice and hear what you speak, and you can tell you're just really brilliant, and you're talented in a lot of different things. And I think when people are very talented at a number of things, it is hard to focus on one, and you kind of have to find a way as you get older to blend them all together and make it work for you. And you said one thing, baseball, and I love baseball. And I was wondering if you could just tell me a little bit about your baseball career. Did you play baseball in high school?
Yeah, sure did. Yeah, I grew up playing baseball. I grew up in a small town in Connecticut, and our claim to fame was that it's where Meg Ryan is from, it's where P.T. Barnum was born, and it was basically a bedroom community of New York City. So really the only thing to do was to get in trouble or play sports or both at the same time. So baseball was for a long time, it was my way out of small-town America. I had grand plans of getting drafted and pitching at Fenway and being the All-American ball player, and I worked really hard at it. Did really well in high school with it, and it came to a point to where I was a left-handed pitcher, and my shoulder, because of the obscure way a pitcher who's left-handed throws, it just my shoulder couldn't handle the level at which I was trying to keep it. So I played, even to this day, I play ball with my oldest son just in the backyard, and we're going to the Red Sox game tomorrow. But baseball is a religion. You know, and I was sitting in an office on Tuesday with one of the principal agents for the CAA, the Creative Artists Agency, and we talked baseball more than we talked anything else. And it gets in your blood, and you never, you know, I'm the guy in my area. Everyone knows me because I've got the Red Sox hat on. And my kids, for a long time, didn't recognize me without my Red Sox hat on. And it's just part of my identity.
Yeah, and it's part of mine, too, I think, especially with four boys here. And all of them are left-handed, and all of them play baseball. And we average about 2 to 3 games a day here. And,
oh, perfect.
Yeah, and one of them is, not to brag about my kids or anything, no, I'm just kidding.
Well, you should.
One of them is the left-handed pitcher for the All-Stars and is going down to South Carolina to play at Myrtle Beach this summer. So it's kind of fun.
Oh,
baseball completely our life here. I've had my one kid, Cameron, he's slept in his baseball uniform, you know, over and over since he was like 20 months old. He's just a little baseball player, that one. Pretty funny, isn't it? How it just gets, he says the same thing. He's like, I'm going to grow up and I'm going to be a professional baseball player. That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because if you're a left-handed pitcher, you have a lot more opportunities than right-handers. You don't have to throw hard if you're a left-handed pitcher, because it's just such an obscure movement that, and I'm not telling you anything you don't already know, but that's great. You know, I love to hear stories about kids that are following their true path. And we get inquiries all the time from all around the world where people say, oh, you're Josh Johnson. I'd love for you to meet my daughter, or my son wants to get on American Idol. Can you make that happen? And at first glance, you know, I try and always say yes, because you never know who you're talking to. You never know if that person holds the key to another opportunity. So I spend a good part of my day listening to inquiries and meeting people and seeing if there's a way to draw that back into the business side. But whenever I meet someone who says, hey, I can sing and I want to be on TV, my first question is always, really? Why? Because I want to know why they want to do it. Is there a parent behind them who's pushing them to do it? Or is it really their love of the craft that has them doing it? And you can tell. You can tell when someone's following their true life and their true destiny. And I want to help enable that. I want to be a part of that. And ultimately, I want to be attached to that. You know, if I get someone on X Factor, or we get them a role in a show, I want them to be on stage and say, I couldn't have done this without Josh Johnson, because that's a win for me.
Yeah, that's exactly. And, you know, you touched on a really key point there, too. And as a parent, you know, you can't force your own dreams and goals also through your children, and you can spot that instantly. Like, I can be at a ball field and see a guy there who desperately wanted to be a baseball player himself, and he's just putting so much pressure on his own kid that the kid's miserable. And so with our kids, what we've done is we have all four very different children, and while they all might play baseball, some of them aren't as good as the other ones. You know what I mean? That's the way it goes. And, you know, one of them is just downright not that good. And, you know, and it's okay, and he knows it. But, you know, they're all very different. Like, one plays the drums, one plays the baseball, one is partying, and, you know, he's the high schooler. I wouldn't say partying, but, you know, he's the kid is just kind of more mellow about the whole thing, and he's going to be a lawyer, you know, that kind of thing. And they're just all different, and you can't – I agree with you. You know, I can only imagine the calls that you must get saying, hey, can you put my kid on this, or hey, can you put my kid on that? And yeah, I wonder how you do weed through, whether it's the parent really or the kid.
Well, you have to vet. I mean, it doesn't matter what level the talent that comes in, whether it's the talent themselves or a handler, and the handler is a parent. You have to vet how serious they are, because you can't deny the level of dedication and hard work that goes into even getting at a corporate level. People don't realize that you can make a very good living being a corporate entertainer. And that's what a lot of the talent, that, you know, the big names from the 80s and 90s that you may not hear about anymore, well, we're touring them around the world, and they're making $200,000-$400,000 a year working private parties. So people, you know, there's a place for everyone in the entertainment world. You just have to find your place and find people that can push you up and keep you elevated. And when we get calls and inquiries of all sorts, the vetting process, ironically, is pretty easy to do. You can tell. First, you know, I always say, send me an EPK, which is an electronic press kit, and I want to hear their voice. Not that I'm the next Simon Cowell or that, you know, that Jimmy Iovine, and I can put someone at the top of Sony, but you have an ear for it, or you have a knack more for the talent side of it. So I can hear someone has what it takes for me to offer them to a label or to a venue. And then from there, it's just finding out how committed they are. It's having a very honest conversation with them, much like I did with you, and saying, if you are ready to do this, then you have to know at times you're going to work for free. At times you are going to do things you don't want to do, but it all has to be positioned for the brand that you're trying to create. Every artist has their own brand. And if you are able to build your brand, you are going to be successful. The trick in all that is to not identify or determine what you think success is going to be. Because the moment you do that, you're probably benchmarking yourself at a level that you aren't able to do. So if you came, or not you, we'll say some Joe off the street came and said, I want to get signed by Sony, and I want to be on the next Voice season. And we say, well, you know, we can do that, but let's hear you. I'm probably going to come back and say, well, let's not talk about where you want to go, because your career is going to define where you're going to go. Let's talk about how you want to get there. That's the more important thing. How are you going to live your life to where we can make this happen? Because I can put you at the House of Blues. I can put you at any Live Nation venue if you're good enough. Or maybe it's a private deal. Let's get you at some weddings. Let's get you doing some backtracks or what have you. And if they're able to do that, then we're off to the races. And everyone has talent. It's just finding out what that talent is. I never want to be the person to say you're not good enough. But in the same respect, if you're not going to fit into our mold through Scarlett, then that's what my answer will be. And then we turn probably 15 to 30 people away a week just saying, I'm sorry, you know, we can't fit you into our model. But that doesn't mean that they're not right for someone else.
Yeah. Well, I always say that, too. Like, if you go to audition for the part and, you know, it's not – people get so, they get so down that they didn't get the part, and it's not about them. It's about that they just weren't right for that particular part, you know, or whatever.
Exactly.
It's interesting when people go through auditions and things like that. Can we talk a little bit about people often, you know, I'm sure you get calls saying, can you put me on Ellen? Can you put me on Ellen or Oprah or something like that?
Sure.
Can we talk about a little bit about the Food Network and, you know, maybe some success stories about you putting people on Ellen DeGeneres?
Yeah, sure. You know, I can speak specifically to that. We represent Jay Ellis, who is one of the celebrity identities for Food Network, and he's on all the cake challenges. He's also on the We Network, and Jay wins a bunch of competitions for, like, Last Cake Standing and all that. And what we do with the Food Network is very particular. We also work with Duff Goldman and Charm City Cakes, and that's more from the collaborative side than from the agent side. Duff's represented by CAA. So whenever we do something with Duff, it's in conjunction with Peter over at CAA. But for Jay in particular, Food Network is great because, A, you have to just love food. And I have always loved the Food Network from the moment it started to this day. I'm a huge fan. And what's great about them is they are profiling people that – 6 years ago, would have never thought they could be on TV and be a celebrity of sorts. And it's taking a raw talent. You know, anyone can cook, so to speak, but not many people can cook for entertainment or cook for value. And that's what the Food Network does. So that's where Jay is. I mean, Jay makes amazing cakes, and he represents a great population of through his generation and through his interests. And what we do is, you know, we take Jay. And we've got him going out to the Ellen show in the fall. and he's been on Rachel Ray. You know, he's been on a couple of other shows, My Fair Wedding with David, I think Tutera's last name. And what we're going to do is we take Jay out to Ellen. They'll have a great segment. These segments typically run anywhere from 5 to 9 minutes long. Jay will probably bring one of his cakes out for Ellen. They'll talk about, you know, funny things that he's done with celebrities and being a celebrity in his own right. Now, the question of how do we get people onto Ellen or Rachel Ray or whomever, that's a long process. The average person probably isn't going to be able to get on the Ellen show unless they win a contest. But even at the level of celebrity that Jay's at and above, there you have to go through specific people in their camp. So it typically starts with a phone call or an email. If you can get a referral, that's even better. Then you have to talk to a junior booker, and then that'll get passed along to the lead booker. And then that's when I come in. And that's when we have the conversations of, well, let's get Jay on there, but here are the questions you can ask. Here are the questions we want you to ask. This is what we can do. And then you just let it take its natural course. So you'll see in the fall when Jay's on there, they may bring Jay on to talk about cakes, and 5 minutes later it's going to be Jay talking about him doing a Trump event and that by accident he tripped Ivanka Trump or whomever. So you just have to – it goes back to what you said earlier. You have to follow your natural path in life, and you can't be contrived.
Yeah, no, you can't be. And do they – when you go on a show like that, do they produce – or do you produce the whole segment? Do you get to write it and so forth for them, or do you say, okay, here's the talent, and then they write it? Or is it a back and forth kind of thing, or do they, or do you just say, here's the talent and go for it? Do you have any say in what goes on?
It can be any of those aside from the writing. I mean, they have their own script writers. They have their own processes, and you can't go in and say this is what it's going to be unless you are at the top, you know, unless you're Brad Pitt's agent and Brad Pitt or George Clooney. But for most of the general celebrity population, it's we'd like to get – so-and-so on with you, or you came to us and sure, we'll come on. This is what we would love to highlight. Here's a new book coming out. Here's a new TV series that's coming out. We'd love to talk about here. The most important thing, especially in my role, is defining what's not open for discussion. So here are the things you're not going to ask my client. And if that happens, know that I'm pulling them off the stage. And that's what happens. After that, it's just, especially if we're using the Ellen example, you just have to let the natural progression flow. You've seen people on her show that their handlers are very strict in what they talk about, and it's not enjoyable. But then on the same respect, you get the people that come out there and they're dancing with her and they make fun of themselves. Those are people, A, that have a great segment, and B, that come back. And that's the goal in anything that you do with talk shows, is you want to be invited back.
And so do you have to have a series of things that you can't ask, or can you go on there and say everything's fair game, go for it, and let's have a blast? Is
that's
that a better
approach talent
for something like that? Oh, okay. All right.
I would say yes. I would say, you know, you work in the celebrity world. You want to retain your celebrity status, so be an open book and make fun of yourself. And it's okay that when you were 16 years old, you got arrested for shoplifting. That's what made you who you are today. And people are going to make the same mistake. No mistake is new. Everyone's made the same mistakes. So that's what I try and tell people. Even when we get to the point of putting them on a series or getting them at a major venue and they're afraid that someone's going to find one of their skeletons, I always tell them, look, everyone's made mistakes. If you hide from them, it's going to make you look guilty. You might as well own up to it and say, yeah, I did that, and I made a mistake, but I wouldn't be here today if I hadn't done that. I'm one of those people. Everyone has skeletons in their closet. And as long as you can live with what you've done, then that's what makes you unique. And someone told me a couple of years ago, and I thought it was brilliant. They said, you know, when you're dealing with celebrities, they are crazy. They're absolutely crazy, and they're crazy in their own world. But it's that craziness, that's what makes them who they are.
Yeah. Yeah, makes
you just have to remember that.
You love them. Yeah. What makes for longevity in the business? What makes you be able to be an 80s or 90s star and be relevant in 2011?
You have to redefine yourself constantly. They're very, even the largest of stars, Madonna, Britney Spears, whomever, people who transcend generations, they've redefined themselves, because the music business in particular is always changing, whether it's from a technological standpoint or just from an ear standpoint. The trends change daily. So the artists that maintain longevity or even go out of favor and come back in, they're the ones who can see the trends, can work within the trends, and aren't the type that says, this is what I'm doing because I'm so-and-so. They have to be able to say, okay, if that's working, then that's what I'm going to do. And that's the key. No matter what, you have to be able to redefine yourself. I'm an example of that. You know, when I started in the industry, I thought that I wanted to be a radio jock for 30 years, and I wanted to be the next Casey Kasem. And you just have to be open to what's available to you and enjoy the ride. I mean, you have to be able to let some of the force of nature propel you through and be open to the opportunities. So when I get, you know, we do work with Foreigner and Journey and Night Ranger and all points in between, and we are able to work with these talents because you can have an honest conversation with them, and you can say, look, we'll bring you to Abu Dhabi, or we'll bring you back over to the UK, but you're only going to play for a 4,000 to 6,000 seat venue, but that's okay. Because those are 4,000 to 6,000 people that are going to go back and buy you on iTunes. And then we can get you to the next level. Or it's okay to be there. You had a great success, and this is just part of that success. Be open to it. The ones that had the hardest time with it are the ones that have bad handlers, people that are making the decision for the talent, and then that's where people implode.
Yeah. Do you think that you have to connect with the children also to make sure that you're in contact with the next generation coming up?
You know, it's interesting you say that, because that's kind of part of our model for 2012. And yeah, I agree. I think you have to be open to every generation. The problem that comes into that is, to a certain age bracket, the child is just the puppet of the parent. And it doesn't matter if they're in the entertainment world or just in life in general. So, yes, you want to be able to talk with a 10-year-old or a 14-year-old or 16-year-old that has talent, but it's a dual conversation. You're also talking to their parent. When we come into those situations, it's having a very honest, very lighthearted conversation with the talent themselves, saying, is this really what you want? Because I'll give you examples of where you can go successfully and where this could lead that's not going to be great. Are you open to that? And then having the same conversation at a different level with the parent. But, yeah, you have to be open to every generation, because that's how you build your business. And at the end of the day, whether we work in the entertainment industry or not, we're building a business. And business rules apply across every genre.
Now, do you it says in here there's a lot of corporate clients, and I can identify with this instantly because my husband's an attorney, and every year we go to an investment management conference either in Palm Desert or Arizona, and every year PricewaterhouseCoopers has a huge singer there. Like, we've seen Stevie Nicks, everything like that. What are some of the corporate clients that you deal with? Can you say things like that? Oh, I don't know if you can tell to say that. I noticed Billy Joel was on this list.
In terms of corporate clients, and okay. Well, I didn't know if you meant from the talent side or from the business side. From the business side, business side, we work with everyone from the Trump Organization to Microsoft, MasterCard, and all points in between. A lot of drink companies, a lot of destination locations. So, you know, we'll work with tourism boards. We'll work with hotel and residency groups, the Pearl of the Orient, you know, all the way down through. It's hard because a corporate client, the corporate is the umbrella that you work under, but that doesn't necessarily mean corporate in what the normal person would think. So corporate could be an embassy. Corporate could be a hotel. Corporate could be a live function in Orlando, Florida. So in our world, corporate is just to identify what the venue is going to be like. So when you're booking talent, when you're booking Stevie Nicks, for example, and you go to her manager and you say, all right, Max, we want to have Stevie come in for a one-off, and the one-off would mean one performance, Max is going to say, all right, so what is it? Is it corporate? Is it private? Is it ticketed? That's what that means. So that's the corporate identity side.
And then, who can you hire anybody to do that?
Well, see, that's the benefit of who I am in the industry. It's kind of funny because every once in a while you really have to champion yourself. And it's proven and it's unequivocal that there really is no one else out there like me. And that's why I'm in the position that I'm in. Because of the relationships that I build and the contacts that I've built over time, there isn't anyone that I can't get. There isn't anyone that I can't be in front of. And that's the networking aspect of this. And that's one of the, not that it's a secret, but that's one of the tricks to the trade is, for example, next Thursday, going to have a meeting with Natasha Bedingfield before her performance at the House of Blues, and her tour manager will be there. Her tour manager used to be the same for Madonna, for Pavarotti, Rihanna, all the way, those are the ones I'm thinking of at the moment, but there's a couple other. So in my role, when I'm having a conversation with him, the next step is, so what can you tell me about Madonna? Can you get me a contact? If I don't have one for Rihanna, it's the same thing. And that's how you build your network. So the answer to your question is yes, we can get anyone. Whenever someone calls and says, okay, I've got an event in Cancun, who can you bring me? My first question is, what's your budget and what's the time? So once I know how much money they have and when the event is, then we're off to the races. And that's when we go out and we get people like Harry Connick Jr. or like the Eagles, and we bring them in.
Neat. That's just really flat out neat. And, I can hear in your voice also, this is another reason why you're here, on the show and everything, is because you're not a dream destroyer. So many times when you're just like little old me and you're just trying to do your thing and, you know what I mean, people will come up to you and say, well, why are you doing that? Go get a real job. What are you doing? You? Kind of thing. What do you say to people? What do you say to everybody out there who's got a dream?
To follow it. I mean, you have to know what your dream is, and you can't let someone else put their own perspective on you. You know, we all come with our own, my grandmother would say, bubblemotzes. We all come with our own little idiosyncrasies, and it's what makes us unique. So we each have our own unique dream, and the goal is to align yourself with someone else who's following their own dream, because you can feed off of that. So when someone comes and says, why aren't you an attorney, or why aren't you a doctor? My answer is, because this is what I want to do. I'm doing what I wanted to do, and what makes me able to get up in the morning and stay up late and work 18-hour days because I love what I do. But what I love to do isn't necessarily going to be even what my wife wants to do. My wife is the corporate legal and, very straight and narrow. And while she's creative in her own environment, she at times will laugh at me and she'll say, I would have never thought to do that. Or why are you in Beverly Hills with the Kardashians? And now you're going to come back and you're going to get on a call with Abu Dhabi 6 hours later. That's my life. It wouldn't fit for someone else, but it fits for me. So the question is, what do I tell people when they say they want to follow their dream? I say, follow it. But just have the one caveat that the dream you think you have now, probably by the time you get there, it's going to be redefined and you have to be open to that.
Yeah, and you and I have talked about this before, where we're each married to, it's like we have our own little legal team.
Right.
It's funny because I'm married to a lawyer and you're kind of married to the same thing. And it's funny because, it took a while when my child went into first grade and I said, okay, I'm going back to work again. It took a while for my husband to get his arms around what I was doing. He was like, what are you doing? And I'm like, no, just trust me. He's like, but you're going to go on the radio. You're going to do this magazine thing. You're going to, okay. And it's interesting because it's probably the same thing where she's like, you're hanging out with the Kardashians? What are you doing? You know what I mean? It's just, it's a different, it's hard to process when your mind doesn't think that way. Does that make sense?
Well, that's it. That's it. And it's, what I do is so obscure. I mean, on a weekly basis, I'll have a call with NASCAR, and then, I'll be talking with the refs for Kardashians, or talking to Mark Rivera, who's an acclaimed sax player. He's Billy Joel's sax player and Ringo Starr's music director. You know, in dealing with, we put Gloria Gaynor on BBC a couple of weeks ago, so prepping Gloria for her call with the BBC, that's normal for me. Now, if I had to go sit in an office and talk something other than what I love to do, I would last about a day before I was trying to find an escape route. And it's just, you just have to be able to do what feels right to you. And not everyone's going to have the same success as you. I mean, there are people well above me who are way more successful than I am, but that doesn't say I won't be there at that point. And there are people who are one-tenth of the level that I'm at, and they're just as happy. If you're doing what you love, you're following your path in life, then the reward is internal as much as it is external, and that's the key.
Yeah. So I want to we have about 20 minutes left to talk with you, and I just wanted to take a real small break for just a second and make sure everybody knows that we're talking with Josh Johnson, who is the U.S. director for the UK-based Scarlet Entertainment. And for you following, if you want to look at their website, it's scarletentertainment.com. And can we talk a little bit about American Idol? Because everybody loves American Idol. What do you guys do with American Idol?
Well, aside from booking talent for them, we have an exclusive partnership with CAA to where we can deliver idol talent in conjunction with them just to open up different markets. And, you know, a lot of dealing with the booking of that type of talent, there's so much legwork involved in it compared to booking a Will Smith where that's one or two conversations. So we do a lot of the legwork, and that's kind of the niche that we've built for that. Aside from that, because of our office and partnership over in the UAE, we're actually in negotiations and finishing negotiations on bringing Idol to the UAE and extending their tour after they have their U.S. tour, bringing them over to the UAE. And, you know, American Idol in the UAE is relatively new, so helping to open up their emerging markets and their brand over there. So there's that aspect. Then there's working with 19 Entertainment and Seacrest Productions in different facets of American Idol, whether it be the eventual talent, you know, bringing them maybe someone that we have that would be great on Idol, or helping them at the venue level. For instance, when they come here to Houston, we'll have some involvement there. And then helping to raise the bookings. The problem with American Idol, and not necessarily that it's a problem, but it is if you fall under it, is that the top three or four will have a relatively long-term career. Whether they are chart toppers or not, they're going to be booked. They're going to have a career for a certain amount of time. It's the in-between group that, you know, the finalists, maybe the bottom five finalists, they're the ones that can say they're American Idol finalists and maybe get on an independent label. But after that, they lose a lot of steam because that's the idol engine. It regenerates itself every season, and you can quickly be forgotten. So we, like Big Mike, we are booking Big Mike places, and he does great for corporate entertainment. Will he be a Fantasia or a Kelly Clarkson? Probably not, but he'll be one of those artists that if he stays with it, he'll be a great corporate entertainer, and that will be his niche in life, and maybe along the way. You know, like Kat McPhee, she now has this huge show coming out, I think, on NBC, and that took some time. But that's, once you get in the entertainment world, you can stay. You just have to follow the ebb and flow of how it goes.
Yeah, and, you know, it brings another point up about wanting to be famous. It really bugs me when people say, And I get this too. It's interesting. People will send me emails saying, "I want to be famous. How do you be famous?" And I'm like, "Well, you know, I don't know. You know, why do you want to be famous? What is famous and famous for what?" That's what I always
say. Exactly. Famous or infamous?
And, yeah, exactly. What do you? What is that? That's all I can say.
I think that's the internet. I think that's because now, if you can get yourself on YouTube, you're going to think you're famous. So people are looking for ways to become famous because they see the YouTube star that ends up getting signed by Ellen's private label, or, you know, they get their own web series because they were on YouTube. Everyone's looking to be famous in their own right, and that's why the entertainment industry is what it is, and that's why we pay the millions and millions of dollars we do to have someone entertain us. And I don't think that's anything new. Long before the internet, people were doing that. But I think because of the reach in the mass communication aspect of it, that people think that they can be famous and they want their 15 minutes of fame. And it's honestly, if you were to ask me offline, I would say that's a big point of contention for myself, because it takes away from those that really do have a talent and want to showcase their talent. And it's hard, because for every five people you meet that have a true organic talent that can give them fame, you have 50 people who someone told them they can sing. So they think that they're famous. And that's one of the odd aspects of American Idol. You see those people on American Idol that think that they can sing when they really can't. It's because they want to be famous. To them, they'd rather be embarrassed on American Idol because they're on TV than go and follow their natural path in life and create fame in their own world.
Got it. Yeah. And what is famous on YouTube? Is that still like, a million, if you get a million hits on YouTube, you're famous now?
Yeah, I mean, fame is all...
Famous in quotes there,
Right, exactly. Yeah, fame's all in the eye of the beholder. I'm famous to my kids, but if you walk down the street, people aren't going to know who I am. And it's just all about creating fame in your own world. So fame on YouTube, I don't know. I stay away from that. We do a lot of links for talent, and a lot of talent will say, I don't have an EPK through a system, but you can go to YouTube and look at me there. I'm not one of those people that would say, well, you only have 500 views, so I don't want to talk to you. I don't believe in that, because those views are all obstructed. You don't know really who those views are and if they've been vetted. So fame on YouTube, I don't subscribe to that.
Yeah, all right. We've got probably like 10 minutes left to speak with you. What would you like to talk about that we haven't touched on? Because I can just feel that there's a million things here that I haven't talked about that you know to talk about that I'm just not asking you.
Well, I mean, there are so many things to talk about, because the world that I work in is always changing. But I don't know if there's something that I would want to talk about per se as much as touch on. And what it comes down to is our business, Scarlett Entertainment, we have a very strong profile in multiple service lines. I don't mean to talk too corporate for a second, but our service lines are so broad that it allows for a dynamic that most people don't have. If you work at CAA, your focus is the talent pool. That's all you deal in. William Morris, APA, the same thing. If you're at a label, if you're at Sony or 10 Man Productions, you're dealing in just that aspect of your world. Why I love my job and why I love the company that I represent is because we work in all of those service lines. So I'm going to have a conversation with Ken Komisar, who heads up Justin Timberlake's label. Then I'm going to go talk to Kardashians. Then I'm going to go talk to Gloria Gaynor or the guys from Night Ranger. And then I'm going to go talk to the high-end client in New Jersey who's getting married, and they want to spend $200,000 to have a band come. So that's what I love, because I touch so many different people on a normal day that my inner creativeness is always being fed.
Now, you touched on Night Ranger, and I love Night Ranger, and so I have to go there for a minute. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's okay.
Of my age. That's funny. Which is fine with me. I don't care. Can you tell me a little bit about what they're doing?
Well, they're on tour right now with Journey and Foreigner, and one of the things that we're working towards is getting them over in that tour over to the UAE. Abu Dhabi itself is such an emerging market in the global marketplace, and part of that is because everyone knows about Dubai. Everyone knows that that's where the kabillionaires went, and Dubai was spending so much money that now everyone thinks they're broke. Fact of the matter is, if you're there locally, you know Dubai has money. But Abu Dhabi wants to be the next Monaco. So what we're doing in partnership with our partner over there, Gem Management, and our office, is we are bringing stars back over. And talk about bringing Natasha Benfield over there. We recently had a major party over there, and the cast of the new Mission Impossible were there. So that's what we're what we're trying to do, and Night Ranger falls into that. A lot of that has to do with my friendship with Mark Rivera. So while we, you know, on a side note, we're working with Sony to tour Billy Joel's music internationally because Billy's not going to be on tour for a while. So we now house all of the tribute bands for Billy Joel and are going to put them in competition and a bunch of other things that will come out through press releases soon. But back to your question with Night Ranger, Mark and I are going to try and bring that that tour over to Abu Dhabi. And because we are affiliated with the Abu Dhabi Tourism Board and the Royal Family, that's kind of what we're looking to do is the U.S. entertainment world is relatively new to Abu Dhabi. Abu Dhabi, the UAE, is a young entity, 40 years old. So that's one of the most amazing and fastest rising markets in the world. And we're just glad to be a part of it. And I think Night Ranger themselves, you know, they're still a major touring act and they have a lot of fans. It doesn't matter if you're 40 years old or 25 years old, good music is good music.
That's what I always say too. And I always wonder if, I don't know how to phrase that quite right. Do they tour around still in the U.S.?
Well, that's what they're on now. Yeah, they're on an international tour. The older bands, and older I'd mean by genre, they'll go on tour, whether it be through a conjoined label or through their own personal label or if they're still with Sony or whomever. And they'll go on major tours. It'll be selected cities. So that's part of the language that you'll hear now, and you'll say, oh, I get it. So when you hear, like, Journey or Foreigners going on tour, they'll say select cities. And what that means is they've gone and they have a manager or an agent that has said, I'm going to put you on tour. I'm going to go to these 8 venues that I have worldwide, and we're going to call it a tour. That's different than going on a label tour. A label tour would be Arista or Sony will come and say, we're going to take we're going to take Justin Timberlake and we're going to put him on tour and he's going to hit 50 cities in 6 months.
Okay.
That's a label tour. That's different than a select tour. And that's what Night Ranger's on. They're on a select tour.
Yeah, and you know, living in Maine, and I'm not from here. We moved here about 7 years ago, but I think there would be just such a passion for, you know, I think the whole state of Maine would show up if Night Ranger, Journey, and Foreigner showed up. I mean, I swear.
That's good to know.
Like
I'm going to get them on the book.
Yeah, please put them at Merrill Auditorium in Maine because I swear it'll sell out for 3 weeks straight. Because I just wonder if people that big think about the smaller cities where people don't come through here very much. You know, we get some, but do they ever go to that level and say, okay, we're going to hit some of the smaller towns, or is that not good enough?
Well, they'll do a Lost City tour. I mean, as far back as the 80s, Van Halen did a Lost City tour, and they came to Hartford. But in terms of using your example for the groups like Journey, Foreigner, Night Ranger, you have to keep in mind that they're working under the band's identity. So most times, those bands, it's not all original members. So, yes, they're looking at smaller venues because they're Night Ranger for 2011. It's not necessarily Night Ranger from 1995.
Yeah.
And so they look for smaller venues if it fits. The other aspect of that is a contractual aspect to where they may be able to perform in Boston, but they can't go to Maine because of the contract that they're under.
Got it.
And, and when they don't come to a local city, that's probably because their contract says that they can't, not because they don't want to.
Yeah, because I would think almost everybody that you represent would just be the biggest hit here ever. Really, I'm not kidding. I think people would just be like, we've got something to do.
Right. Well, I lived on Martha's Vineyard for a couple years, and we had the same phenomenon on the vineyard that I used to joke that I need to get pulled over by a cop in order to talk to someone because there's no one there in the winter. And that's the same thing. I mean, I being a New Englander, I've been up to Maine. So I know what you're talking about. I spent a couple of weeks as a kid on Cranberry Island in Maine, and the biggest thing to do was to pick blueberries. So,
exactly.
Talent would love to go up there. The problem, the way that the entertainment world in music works now, it's all about ticket sales. So whether you're AEG or Live Nation or whatever, if I can't get a high ticket pull, then they're not going to listen to me. You know, I can bring an act to this.
Yeah,
it's all about money, because money is what funds everything else. So unless you're going to go out and get private sponsors to bring them in, which you can, if it's a straight ticketed environment or a will call environment, then it's we'd love to go to Maine, but I think there are about as many people in Maine as there are in Chicago. So we'd rather go to Chicago to where we can also get the outlying areas.
Yeah, definitely. All right, can we talk about your kids for a little bit and your
sure.
home life? Are we allowed to do that? Okay. So,
yeah, of course.
Okay, I was just wondering for I kind of know already, but for those listening, are you young? You know, how old are you doing all these neat things?
I'm 34, and 34. I started right out of college. So my first real job was at the radio station, and mm-hmm. You know, my wife and I, we married relatively young, but we both, you know, did everything the right way. And she laughs and she said, yeah, I married when I was young, but I had a college degree and I had a job. So that's the same thing with me. You know, we've done everything. You know, we lived in a small little apartment in Charleston, South Carolina, and ate ramen noodles. But we were working college graduates who were working towards a goal. So, you know, I have three kids. I have a daughter who's turning 9 on Tuesday, and then I have a 6-year-old son and a 3-year-old son. My wife helps run an international immigration firm. And she's a star in her own right. You know, she's known throughout the world for global immigration. And we run our own paths, and we meet up every night at 6 or 7 when she gets home. And then it's just, my wife's name is Amberly, and then it's just Josh and Amberly sitting around talking and probably talking about business, because we've always got our BlackBerries with us. But I try and be as family-focused as possible, and that will never change. You know, I was supposed to be in the UK for 3 weeks, and I was very adamant that I can be there for a week, but I have to come back because it's my son's birthday and then school starts, and I'm not going to miss those things. I love that every day at 3 o'clock I leave my office and I go, I take my kids, I walk them to the house, walk them inside, and we spend about an hour finding out about the day, having snack, having fun, and then I go back to work, and the kids know that Dad's there every day.
I love how grounded you are, and you know, that's kind of why we're friends, because you know it's just, you're just so, you're exactly what we started this conversation. You're nice, you're a great dad, you're a great husband, you're doing great things with your job, you're just an all around, you know, great person. You've got a great spirit about you, and I love that you're not a dream killer, because you can say anything to you, you know, and you're like, yeah, okay, well, let's see how that works. You know, you're just funny. And
well, I appreciate that.
Yeah, well, and I think, and I'm sure everybody around you does too. And how important is that for you to be, and we only have a few minutes left, let's see what we're at, about 2 minutes, at the 2-minute mark here. How important is that for you to be a great dad?
Oh, that's, I wake up in the morning and my day revolves around how can I give back to my kids and my wife, and that's what I go to bed thinking about. When I was about 12 years old, and you can ask my parents, the one thing that I told them is, I'm going to grow up, I'm going to be married, and I'm going to be a dad. That's all I ever wanted to do. And luckily, I put myself in a position to where I can be who and what I want to be. And that's, I'm identified as dad and husband more than anything else in life, because no matter what, that's what my focus is. That's why I work. I mean, I love what I do, but to be completely honest, I'm doing what I love so I can be with my family.
Yeah. Well, that's refreshing to hear, because it's just a great spirit about you. So we have to go, but I want to thank you for being with us for the full hour. And
Josh
Johnson. Yeah, and please visit scarletentertainment.com, and then we will follow up in our network, which is beynetwork.com, with a link to the radio show and an article about Josh. And then, Josh, I think I'm going to post you on besteveryou.com too, and you know, about every other website that I have. Is that all right?
Sounds great. And we're always open to any inquiries, whether it's for advice, consultation, or just to chat. You know, I love people. So
yeah.
Come on in.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you're very reachable. So, all right, well, thanks for being with us today. And again, everybody, just please visit Scarlet Entertainment and follow all of Josh's wonderful clients and endeavors. And I hope everybody has a great day. All right, Josh, we'll talk
great.
Again soon.
All right.
All right. Have a great day. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.